This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement, where the managerial shuffle is well and truly underway and will obviously be amongst our talking points on this week's edition. In the Sky Bet Championship, Mick McCarthy leaving Cardiff City after an eighth consecutive defeat and a sixth consecutive at home, both unwanted club records. In Sky Bet League One, Charlton Athletic ended Sunderland's majestic 100% home record, but only after the departure of their manager, Nigel Adkins. And in Sky Bet League 2, Newport County stuck to the tried and tested formula that has led them to two playoff finals in the past three seasons by replacing one local boy with another. Cardiff City first team coach James Robey winning his first game in charge after taking over from Mike Flynn. It's the official EFL podcast. So, after our football management, mental health and Black History Month special editions of the official EFL podcast so far this month, it's fully back to the cut and thrust of what's going on up and down the EFL's three divisions. And I can't think of a better place to start than the top of the pile, where Scott Parker's unbeaten Bournemouth lead the Sky Bet Championship. And no messing around, Scott. This is where you wanted to be. This is what you aspired to do this season, to lead the way.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say, Lynn, to be honest with you. So a very good start, and of course, exactly where we want to be, and going very well at the moment. So it's been, it's been a very good start. As quick as I say that, the word start quickly springs to mind, and it's exactly what it is. So, cliche as it sounds, I think we all realise that still a long way to go. We're doing very well, but we need to maintain and keep the consistency which we've shown in the first 14 games, really. Keep showing that we're here. We're going to keep developing as a team and as a group of players, which has been the case. And keep going, mate. Yeah, and that's the main thing.
Yeah. Is that natural caution part of the mix of being a football manager? I went to see Mark Robbins a few weeks ago, and he said to me, I love chatting, but I'm always conscious of the fact I don't want to slap on the backside in the game that follows, that my messaging has to be pitch perfect. Is that awareness always with you, Scott, making sure your emotions are controlled and you're not seen to be getting carried away?
Yeah, I think so. I think also we realise, and I've been in the game a long time, and you take your eye off it one little bit, it's got a real good habit of biting you, really. So I think I also know what this division's about, and it's a tough, tough division. And a lot of games, well, hard games, which come very, very quick. So, I think the most important thing is controlled in your emotions, understanding where you are, very balanced in that, not too high when you're winning like we are at the moment, and the same when things are not going so well. We live in a world where everything's very drastic. I think that's very clear. You're either the best thing since sliced bread, or you're the opposite to that. And normally, my experiences tell me you're somewhere in between them both a little bit, never too high. So, as always, the main focus for me, like any team I have, is processes and understanding and sticking to them, really, and being very professional in our ways, coming in, wanting to develop. And I know if we do that, we'll be successful. So that's the main drive, really.
Yeah, but it's a long season for you too, and presumably you have to manage your energy level. So does that mean at home, for example, you might give yourself half a day to relax and enjoy? Because otherwise, staying in that zone for 42 weeks or whatever it is a heck of a long time. It would be exhausting.
Yeah, it is. It's relentless in what we do. And I think, it's probably a question you should ask my wife, really, in terms of that. Because
do you want me to get her on the line, mate? Shall I do that and see what she says?
She'll probably say that I'll never stop in that sense. I'm always constantly, if even when I'm with her, there's times when I'm just looking up in blank spaces and thinking about the next day. And I think that's just the way it is. I think that's part and parcel
risky.
Of what
really
we do.
Risky, yeah. Mate. Really, yeah. Risky, Scott.
Not exactly that. Yeah. I think I spoke to you before. I think it's that, for all of us, is that fear of failure, is that fear of not being successful or not winning games or not being right at it. So there's just a constant, there what's going over in your head, just understanding, okay, we've got the afternoon off or a day off here, but as quickly as you are, before you know it, it's that Sunday night before Monday school starts again. you've got your last few hours of the weekend, but you don't really enjoy it because all you're thinking about is getting into school the next day, and if your own work's done, and before you know it, you're back amongst it. So, I suppose that's just part and parcel of what we do, really.
Yeah. You're referring to an interview I did with you for Football Focus about 6 weeks ago, and I have to say, feedback-wise, I think I've probably had more from that than any other piece I've done, because you just walk this line between the bittersweet sides of football. You obviously love it, but it's painful at the same time. And you painted wonderful pictures, which a lot of people have remarked on that relationship that all football managers do have with the game they love.
Yeah, I think everyone has it, really. I think we are, and the world we're in, our current world, I said it the other day in an interview, is probably the only profession where any manager, as a professional manager, but it's our job to do what we do, it's probably the only job that probably gets judged the most, or people seem to have real high opinions on. And I'll give the example of a doctor. You wouldn't go into a doctor and really start questioning drastically on what they're doing, what they're not doing, why they're doing this, why they're doing that. But the world we're in, and football, and I get that, that's what makes our game so great, is that everyone as opinions, but you have to be on your game. You have to be on your game, because one, you're trying to deliver a message to 30 men in your squad, and obviously getting that message across and then believing and understanding it. So you've constantly got to be at the height of your game. So with that comes fear, you understand that the highs and the lows, really, like I said. So you got to stay on it.
Yeah, and also messaging to the people that are employing you, the club owners, chairman, etc., and all those supporters whose hopes and dreams you carry on your shoulders.
That's exactly it. And I enjoy that. I really enjoy that. I've got a good staff. Here, especially, and it's a good football club, and everyone's on the same line. Very rational people who understand the game a little bit and understand that the processes and exactly how or what you need to do to develop very good football teams, and more importantly, what you need to have to develop very good football clubs. While there's huge pressure on myself and my staff to deliver, I'm in a good environment where people are understanding of the dynamics of what football brings sometimes.
I know you knew the club, because obviously your brother-in-law Harry Arter used to play there. It felt like a very long courtship over the summer, but when I look at you, it just seems like a perfect fit, you and Bournemouth. Just, you seem to be so in the right place for you.
Yeah, I feel like that, Clem, I really do. And again, I'm always conscious of questions like that, and me saying, oh yeah, you'd expect me to say no different, of course you would, if things are going well, but I honestly do. And the feeling I get from the people above me are like I said, one of a very levelness and a real understanding, and they give me the license and the ownership to really do what I need to do with a team and develop this team to try and win football matches and try and get us promoted, really. So in terms of a work environment for me, it's perfect. I just solely focus on delivering and trying to develop a football team and develop players that, one, are assets to us, and two, obviously we can win games and try and be successful this year. So in that sense, it's worked all right. And of course, it's always easier. I've come in my first 14 games and run defeated. So that none of us have really been tested at the moment, and there is going to be testing times ahead. My suspicions are, and what I suspect is from every one of us in them times, I don't see any real difference. I still see people that will probably want to work harder and try even more to put that right, really. So,
How do you use the unbeaten run? It's obviously brilliant, momentum, but then sometimes the longer these runs go on, teams can become more cautious because they don't want to get beaten, Scott. So is that a delicate one for you to handle with the boys as well?
It's probably not too delicate. Look, we're in a good position. I think we need to understand, again, I've been at clubs where you're going for leagues, you're winning leagues, and on the opposite side of that, you're a bit of an underdog. There's one thing what I do know for sure is the people chasing you down, or when you're at the top, that's the hardest position to be in, because everyone wants a bit of you, everyone's trying to chase you down, you're a big scalp. So of course I think we need to recognise and understand that, and as always, I always say to the team, you need to bring a certain endeavour to every game, and a certain work ethic and a certain understanding. If we do that, then I know that we'll be fine in that sense. So we use it to our advantage at this present moment in time. We every game that comes along, we're in, confidence is very high, and the whole culture around the football club is in a good place because we're winning games, and that's as you would expect, really. So of course there's always elements what you're always weary of at this moment. They're not things that I feel like I need to bring to the fore to the team, and more importantly for this team is, let's keep doing what we're doing at this present moment in time, keep understanding what's getting us results, and what's getting us the results is a work ethic every single day when we come into work. And that needs to maintain, really.
Of the more pleasurable elements of the job, has how well stocked the academy is surprised you, Scott?
It's helped. It's helped, really. I've come in the summer when I looked at the Cat 3 academy. So, no disrespect to the boys, but obviously in that sense, the finances and what. Cat 3 brings in terms of the bigger academies is a lot less in resources. So, but I've been nothing but impressed with it, really. And it's a big credit to the people who are involved in that, the players as well. When you think of Jordan Zamora, Jaden Anthony, Gavin Kilkenny, these are players that have not played a lot before this year, been given their opportunity, have listened intently and worked incredibly hard. And have become really pivotal to what we've done this year, and I think that's probably a real that's a massive achievement for the academy, to be honest with you. So fair play to them, and fair play to the players. People talk about myself and my staff in that sense. We give them the opportunity, of course, and give them that platform, but ultimately they're the guys that need to work tirelessly. They're the ones that need to keep showing up and keep being that real influence on, or certainly trying to impress myself, to give them that. And they've done that very well. Give them the opportunity, and then they need to take it. And they're playing, they're doing really well. So I've been really, really pleased with the academy.
Yeah. The other side of this, obviously, is the worst part has obviously been the diagnosis of David Brooks with stage 2 Hodgkin lymphoma. I mean, from your own point of view, it's not one you'll ever get from the management coaching manuals, is it? It's just one, I guess you've got to feel your way through.
Yeah, it's been very, very difficult. You see someone so young and so healthy, certainly before that, and fit in their age, and to be given that diagnosis has been terrible news, really, for us, certainly 2 weeks ago when that came through. So it's been, in terms of managing that and managing the players, and for the players as well, it's been difficult, no difficult than anyone. It's obviously the news has been for David, really. So my message has been very consistent in that, we, as a group of players, this group are right behind him, this football club's right behind David as well. And we'll put every support mechanism in place for him to battle this part of his life, which he's facing. And we have no doubt, he'll come through that. And I think we've done that in terms of the crowd as well. The weekend was the first time that us as a home supporters, as a football club, can really show David what he means to this club. There's, I've been here 17 weeks and I've built up a rapport with David, but there's players who have played with him for some years. So, I see very clear that how much he's loved and appreciated. And like I said, supporting him, for him to get back to doing what he does best, and us seeing what he does best, and us out on that right wing playing football.
Yeah, please send him our love. It goes without saying. Finally, who supports you? Are you quite well mentored? Have you got sort of experienced heads from your past that are there for a subjective ear occasionally?
I've got good staff around me. Very, very good staff. I'm fortunate enough that my staff have been with me now, and I've got very honest guys who you know, it's very open forum. I have someone who I speak to very often in Mike Griffiths, who's helped me as a player and been working with for 15 years really. So he's someone I bounce things off of, someone who's helped me early on in my career when I was probably struggling on a sports psychology side of things, has helped me and now is obviously still helping me on a daily basis, and then probably just supporting me, my wife and my family really. So I think that's probably the most important ones.
Brilliant stuff. I tell you what, I've loved that chat, as I have done when we've talked previously in the past. I'll tell you what I'll do. If you guarantee to buy me a beer next time I'll see you, I'll clip the bits out about you staring into space when your missus is talking to you, okay? is that a fair? Otherwise, no, I'm just going to publish it in there. She'll get to hear it and you'll get absolute pelters next time you go home.
Count the beer on me, mate. So take them out.
Thanks, Scott. Lovely to talk Cheers, to you. Pal. Keep up the great work.
Cheers, mate. See you in a bit, pal.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
So, that's Skybet Championship leaders Bournemouth. What about the other 71 EFL teams? Let's discuss the fortunes of some of the rest, with a man who led Burnley into the top flight for the first time in 33 years in 2009. Owen Coyle went on to manage Bolton Wanderers, Wigan Athletic and Blackburn Rovers, as well as in the MLS and currently the Indian Premier League. And my sources tell me, Owen, you are in Goa, but that was producer Dave, so that doesn't necessarily mean that it's geographically accurate.
No, he's 100% correct. You should know. Listen, Dave doesn't get anything wrong. He's spot on. He keeps you right, Clem. You should know that.
Don't spoil the magic for the kids, Owen.
Brilliant. Well, we're 4.5 hours ahead, but listen, great to be on chatting with you. I love, as we always do, love chatting about the Championship and League One and League Two, and it's all very exciting stuff.
Yeah, but obviously the football that you are coaching and managing, or at least the circumstances, the environment, very different. Paint us a little picture about what you're working with, where you are, just so we get a flavour of you, please.
Yeah, so obviously this will be my third season now in the Indian Super League, which is a franchise league, a bit like the MLS. There's been huge investment in these clubs. It's now will be in its eighth season, so really in its infancy, but getting obviously better. India, as you know, a population of 1.3 billion, but been badly affected by COVID, as a lot of countries have. So last year, the league was played in a bio bubble in Goa, which is a beautiful part of the world. Many people come on holiday, very picturesque, beautiful beaches. But for us, obviously, all the teams are based in Goa. The league will get played behind closed doors, but the football gets played. It was an exciting season last season. And again, this year will be a bio bubble again. So there are many challenges, Glenn, because particularly with the mental health of players and such forth, because, you know, to 6 months in the hotel and your movement's restricted, you can only, you know, interact with people within your own bubble, which really is your teammates and the staff. But that being said, it allows the football to get played. It's a decent level, you know, some very, very good players in the league, some foreign players, and the young Indian players are getting better every year. So it's it's a wonderful challenge, and again, really enjoying it. As we do, to be involved in football. I mean, we're very, very blessed to have your career, and I'm very fortunate in many, many ways.
When you say decent level, if we were to take your team and try and supplant them into the English pyramid, where would they slot in?
Yeah, I mean, that's a brilliant question. I was always asked that as well in the MLS. Where would these teams fit in? Because in America, as you know, there's some wonderful players that can play, obviously, at the top end of the Premier League, and then you have some young players coming out of college and what have you. I would say the overall level, Clem, if I had to go and play a team towards the top end of League One, I think I'd feel comfortable that we could win the game. I think it'd be a tight game. So I think that's okay. You're allowed. Yeah, just quickly so you know, this year slightly changed. Last year you were allowed to sign 7 foreign players, and five were allowed on the field at any given time. This year it's changed to 6 you can sign, but 4 on the field. And that's to tie in with the AFC criteria, because there's Champions League slots and AFC Cup, which is the equivalent of Europa League. So those spots are available. But what it does, it allows a young Indian player to step up and look to improve. And that really should be the aim of the league, that they look to improve the Indian players for the national team, so that one day India can challenge to try and get to World Cup finals and such forth. So I think it's a good initiative. But the foreign players certainly enhance the league. Some very good players, international players that played at top level, some terrific coaches. that worked at very high levels in Spain and such forth. So it's certainly getting better every year, and it's a really enjoyable challenge.
Good. How's the challenge of getting exotic Scottish goods? Where do you get your iron brew and your deep-fried Mars bars from?
Well, deep-fried Mars bars, not a big lover. Iron brew, as you know, because I'm teetotal. I love my soft drinks. I think, I can say this now because I'm here, but when I brought, you know, the two cases with me, one was I love my tea, so between my tea bags and my iron brew, my chocolate biscuits and such forth. So, unfortunately...
Wait a sec, you're in one of the key production areas of tea. What the hell are you bringing it in the opposite direction for?
I know, but I tell you, yeah, that's very true, Clem, but there's nothing better than your own, knowing your own mind. This is the ones I like. I'm very fussy, as you know, with stuff like that. So I've got my, I don't know if it's advertised, but I've got my Tetley tea bags with me. I think they're actually owned by Tata as well.
Okay, Tata being the owners of your club,
of
which is
exactly
yeah. We've always, and so it all comes together, mate. When you see what's happened to a couple of pals of yours in the English leagues, Mick McCarthy, Nigel Adkins this week, do you miss being at home?
Yeah, listen, we're very fortunate. We love being in football. I mean, obviously, I was saddened by the news because obviously Nigel and Mick are good friends of mine. They've had exemplary careers, had huge success, as we all have in football. But equally, we've all had disappointments, and that's the nature of the game. You know, that it's a tough environment. It's getting tougher every year, I would suggest, for any manager, head coach, particularly the young ones coming in. But it's the nature of the game. I mean, your best days are your playing days. We've always said that, Clem. You know, you play as long as you can. And then when the legs give up, of course, it's a natural transition to coaching and managing. And as you have a bit of longevity, as I've been fortunate to have, then all good and well. But I think with the social media, with obviously the criticism that comes and everything, you lose two games now and managers are getting put under pressure. So you and I spoke about this before, Clem, and I've always been in the belief, and I know it's not possible because of the finance in football and owners want to, you know, but I've always believed if you start a season, and this is even, I've said this even when I've not been working, if you start the season and out with illness, you should be allowed to finish the season with that club. Now, the challenge, obviously, there is that owners panic when they're down at the bottom and, you know, a bad run of results and they want to change because they want to, if not get in the Premier League or be in the Championship or move up a league or stay in League One, all the challenges that come with that. So I think there's sometimes a knee-jerk reaction. But sometimes, as what's been shown with football, you know, when you have a manager for a number of years, that's when you can achieve, you know, success and build on something. Unfortunately, you know, managers don't get the time to do that these days.
This is a really unfair question, but you're a big boy. You can take it. What would a manager's perspective be on how many games you should be allowed to lose before an owner takes custody of the club again? Are we talking 3, 6, 9? Are you allowed to lose half a season? Are you allowed to lose every game of the season?
In fairness, Clem, I think it's a brilliant question. There's not a simplistic answer to that, basically because sometimes when you're having these run of results, as we've all had them in different times, and the top guys have had them at the very highest level of the game, sometimes there's a number of factors that come into play. You know, you might have players suspended, you might have players' injuries, players that normally when you have your squad, you have certain players that you find hard to replace because you can't replace like for like. So I think there's got to be many factors into it. I think as well, owners and, you know, chief executives, I think they have to look at the body of work that the manager's put in and has there been those things that went against them. And this is not anybody looking for excuses. This is just looking for in fairness and understanding what the process is. And if you brought that manager in and believing that what he can do, and then some things, you know, the injuries, stuff like that has went against you, sometimes bad decisions, the bounce of a ball. But I think if you can see that there's still, you know, we still have that belief, we retain that. And I think ultimately the changes get made when the owners kind of run out of patience or sometimes they're getting a bit of criticism. And we all know when owners and directors get criticised, the manager's going to take the fall for that. That being said, the easy way to make sure it doesn't happen is to make sure that you win games and you get results. And if you do that, then not always the case, but more often than not, you'll obviously still be in your job with a chance to build things. And even, you know, you see last week, and I don't want to go away on a tangent, but even with Steve Bruce, who I've got so much time for, I mean, to finish the mid-table as he did with Newcastle twice, then, you know, I don't think ultimately it was about results that he left Newcastle.
I've got another question for you. Hopefully you like it as much as you have the last couple of them. My question is this. Did you answer my last question?
I think I did. I was looking for a number,
and you didn't give me one.
Clem, I think it's impossible to give somebody a number because you know if you bring a manager in, you've brought him in the belief that you believe he's the right one. So give him the time and the opportunity. And the other thing as well, Clem, there's a number of things. If in terms of, I never mentioned it there, but in terms of budget, if you've got a lower budget in the league, then what's the expectation of that club? You know, so I think if you've went and spent a lot of money and the expectation of that you should be in fighting promotion places and you're down near the bottom, then of course I think you look at it and you say, well, why is that the case? But I think if you're a club and you're a manager with at the lower end in terms of the budgets for that league and you're able to keep the team in the league because you've got a low budget, then I think that's huge success. So success is different for other clubs. I think the challenge, Clem, is that if you've given somebody a low budget but your expectation is you should be the top end of the league, then I think you have to look and give a bit of balance to that. So I don't think there's an answer in respect of 3, 4, 6 games, 10 games, 6 months. But what I did say earlier, if you start the season, I believe you should be allowed to finish it, given that it's a fair run.
Oh, and the bit I can't get over is just how quickly fortunes can change. From when Mick took over in January, 4 league defeats in his first 28 matches, then loses 8 in a row. There must be points when you guys are scratching your heads and wondering what on earth has changed.
Yeah, again, Clem, spot on. Brilliant question. And you're right, because not only that, the run, but obviously Mick obviously came in because at the time they changed because they thought Cardiff weren't doing as well as they wanted to be, the owners and such forth. Cardiff just missed out in the playoffs last year. So close. And, you know, on another day, they might have been in the playoffs with a chance of being promotion. And that's the nature of the game, because football changes very quickly. Now, Mick McCarthy doesn't go from the opinion everybody had at Cardiff last year and how good a manager he was, him and Terry with him, because they're a brilliant combination. He's an outstanding manager, Mick. He knows the game inside out. But they've went from the highs of winning games and nearly getting promoted to obviously losing those games. Now, the truth of the matter is, in football, 1 minute everybody thinks you're the best thing since sliced bread. The next minute, we're all absolute dump ones. The truth of the matter is, we're probably all somewhere in between, that we've got a great grasp of the game. We know the game, we know. But players help you to win games. And obviously, if you can have your best squad available, and, you know, as we say, you know, the little bounce of the ball, sometimes a little bit of luck that we all need at different times. So, yeah, of course, as a manager, there are times that you're scratching your heads. But I think what you've got to do is stay true to your beliefs, your principles, your body of work, and continue in that vein, knowing, you know, that it can turn for you if you're given the opportunity to get the best out of players. Because I think, you know, that'll be the key, that you maximise the potential that players have.
It feels like for Mick it was a tug of war, that it just became an unstoppable tide. And have you been in a similar situation yourself at any point where it's just you're kind of being dragged towards the plug hole, and no matter what you try, you're trying every trick in the book within your philosophy, but it just won't stop dragging you in?
Yeah, listen, absolutely. And I think you do. And the thing about it is, you know, Clint, because you know all the boys personally, so you know how much they care about the game, not just about a football team, because and many times you're responsible for a whole city. And that's not something that us as managers we take lightly. You know, that's something we, you know what we like when we've lost the game. You come and you speak to us, Clem, and to be fair to you, you understand and you know. So we all care passionately, as Mick does, as Nigel does, as all the boys. But of course, there's sometimes you go on those runs and whatever you do, it's the bounce of the ball's not going your way, you're picking up key injuries, you're getting your players sent off. And I think that's the bit that, from the mental strength and the character, we've all been there, that you've still got to, you know, keep going, trying, hopefully you're given the time to work your way through it. And if you are, obviously the sun comes out again and we go again. But the key there, as you mentioned earlier in your question, is how many games do you get to do that?
Yeah. The immediate aftermath from being so consumed with the game that you love, at the core of a club, amongst people, some of whom you have pulled in and shaped all around you, to put in your cardboard box in the boot and driving out of the training ground for the last time and then finding the pace of life is radically different. That must be some adjustment on.
It is. It goes without saying, because when all said and done, you know, for the highs and lows, we absolutely love the game. I mean, it's the best game in the world. And of course, you know, as a manager, it's a difficult moment, absolutely. And as I say, that's something that we don't take lightly. But I think, you know, we have those qualities, we have the resilience, we have... You do one or two things, Clem. You either feel sorry for yourself, or you get up in the morning and you're prepared to do something about it, and you look, obviously, for that next opportunity that somebody gives you, and hopefully you're reinvigorated, you're charged up, and you're ready to show people that you're still the same guy that's achieved success before. So, you know, in life, like most things, there's always going to be disappointments, but I think it's how you react to it, how you pick yourself up, and how you show that you're ready. I mean, I... Obviously, as you know, grew up in the Gorbals and we had to fight and scratch for everything that we had. So, you know, I'm ready for those challenges, as Mick will be, as Nigel will be. And, you know, there's been terrific managers that have, you had setbacks and they've bounced back. I mean, you know, he's a good friend of mine and he's an outstanding manager. But when you think, you know, when Brendan Rodgers lost his job at Reading, you know, and Brendan went away, and everybody knew he was a terrific manager even at that point, although Reading were down at the bottom. But Brendan, had he stayed on at Reading, would have turned that around anyway. But obviously, he went away, worked his socks off, and obviously, he's been on an upward trajectory ever since and playing some terrific football. You know, the jobs he's done, Swansea, Liverpool, where he was so unlucky as well, to Glasgow Celtic, to Leicester now, being obviously mentioned about Manchester United, because that's the nature of football. So even it happens to the very best of managers. So you've got to pick yourself up, you go again, and you always try and do it as I do, with a big smile on your face, because we're very lucky and very fortunate and very blessed in many ways to have had our career in football.
You always leave me uplifted. It's got nothing to do with your tea bribes and your tea cakes and all the rest of it. Here's my final question on this. I suppose Nigel Adkins related. I mean, he worked so hard at Hull City. I guess he'd had a couple of bumpy experiences at Reading. He'd certainly had a bumpy experience at Sheffield United. He worked so hard to kind of, if you like, fill up his reputation again at Hull City, left them in good shape, made a really plucky decision. He could foresee what did happen the season before last. And then he waited 20 months for the right opportunity. It's difficult, isn't it? Because it, you know, you go into a division lower than you have been working, it doesn't quite work out. And then inevitably human nature says you must be worrying about the effect on your reputation.
Yeah, I think in football, I think what we all, certainly because we have enough confidence in our ability, I think we always believe that, you know, Charlton are, you know, as much as in League One and obviously at the bottom end of the moment, Charlton are in essence a very, very big club. A club that has the potential, you know, like a Sunderland, a potential to be divisions higher if the right funding's in place, if the right backing and all the support and everything else. So I can understand why Nigel would see Charlton as a huge challenge. It's a big club. I mean, I remember Charlton in the Premier League, you know, playing against them and different things. So, you know, there's no doubt that's a big, big club. So you can understand that. But I would say that, you know, Nigel, as he is, a very clever man, as you know. So he'll obviously gather his thoughts, you know, as well. So you take your medicine and look to pick himself up again, and hopefully, you know, he got the opportunity, as you say, the job he did at Hull. If another one of those comes along, then he'll be ready for it. So, you know, I wish him all the best as always. But, you know, that's the challenge ultimately we face in football, that it's changed. You know, it's evolved very, very quickly, and managers aren't given as much time as they certainly used to be.
Yeah. Thoughts as we are, what, 14 games into the Championship season? We've already heard from Scott Parker on this week's episode of the Official EFL podcast. Obviously top, unbeaten, Fulham tucked in behind. West Brom have had a little bit of a blip by their standards, lost a couple of games. Are we pretty much where we expected to be? Maybe a few of us tipped Sheffield United to be in that mix as well. But aside from that, the top of the table look like we thought it would be on?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, Scotty's move, I mean, I get so much time for Scott Parker, and I think the move there, he knew the squad there, he knew if he could, you know, get one or two good additions to that squad, because we spoke about them last year when, you remember, they were on an outstanding run, Bournemouth, and obviously had a chance last year to get promoted. And I think Scott has seen that, and he realised that would be a very good opportunity for him at a good club. It's normally a very stable club as well. And I think the signings of big Gary Cahill, who I work with and get so much time for, Ryan Christie from Glasgow Celtic, I mean, these are outstanding players for that level. And I think they can add to already the existing quality that Bournemouth have. Fulham, again, fully expected them to be there. I think you're right. I think Sheffield United will still, you know, make that run to come on the premises. You have to say, Clem, the Championship this year, I think it's absolutely brilliant. I think there's 6 points separate 5th from 19th to Preston. So, you know, even Preston down 19th, and normally 19th in the league, you think you're only actually 6 points off 5th place. So it's going to be a fascinating championship season, as it always is. And, you know, so I'm really excited at how that's developing.
I love the fact that you're so many thousands of miles away. I'm scrambling, looking down the table and doing the live maths, and it's indelibly stamped in your head. Can I ask you about players? Because, I mean, I went to see Tim Ream last week for BBC One's Football Focus, and I was chucking at him the emotional turmoil for those long-standing Fulham players. Miss out in the Championship playoff final, promoted, relegated, promoted, relegated. That's a lot of highs and lows, isn't it? But when I look at Aleksandar Mitrovic, he's now got 15 for the season. I mean, bluntly, is he just not good enough for the top level, or is part of the equation that Fulham will play more expansively at the Championship level because they're more dominant, but when they go up to the Premier League, they have to be a lot tighter and don't necessarily play to his strengths. But his reputation gets a bit tarnished because obviously the ball's not hitting the back of the net as regularly.
Yeah, I think there's merit in what you say. I think Mitrovic is a very, very good player. I've got to say, at any level, I think the challenge, and you kind of touched on it, Clem, when Fulham go into the Premier League, then obviously coming up, then they're perceived that they're going to be kind of at that bottom end challenging away. Now, I always equate it, you know, with strikers, you could have the best striker in the world, but you need to supply them with ammunition, otherwise you're not going to score the goals. In fairness to Mitrovic, I don't think Mitrovic is a player that's going to pick the ball up in the halfway line and beat two and three men and score a goal like that. But if you put enough quality ball in the box for Mitrovic, he'll get his goals at any level. So I think it's a bit of that when Fulham, you know, if they get up again, then hopefully with, you know, the spending power that he might have, that obviously, you know, the Fulham team certainly of old that were in the top half of the Premier League, then Mitrovic playing that team would score a lot more goals in the Premier League. I think he's a very, very good player. Obviously, the key this year is to get them back up and then have an opportunity to show people that he is a bona fide, very, very good Premier League striker as well.
Yeah.
Just on the Tim Ream one, I'm going away on a tangent here, but Tim Ream actually, I'm going back now to when we lost our place in the Premier League at Bolton the last day of the season. Tim Ream had a free header in the 94th minute at Stoke City. We're drawn 2-2. Straight into the goalkeeper's arms. Had Tim scored, that was the day that Aguero won the league for Manchester City against QPR. Had Tim scored his header, then Bolton would still have played the Premier League. That's the fine margins of football, Clem. Just when you mentioned Tim, because I signed Tim from when Gary Cahill.
It was you.
I didn't want to lose Gary. As you remember, he was out of contract in the summer. And Bolton ended up just taking $6 million for Gary. And Tim Ream, I brought him from New York Red Bulls. And he came in, lovely lad. He's had a great career. And so there you go. There's a little story for you, Clem.
Yeah, no. And the other part of this is, which you haven't quite revealed, is you were obviously then the manager that forced Tim Ream to cancel his honeymoon because I think he just got married and he was going on his honeymoon. And the only way he could join Bolton at that time when you wanted him was he had to turn to his missus and say, sorry, we ain't going to the Maldives, Seychelles or wherever his honeymoon was due to be.
That's Clem, that's brilliant, that's very true. And of course, as a manager, I got the blame. The bottom line is that the kid was desperate to come on board in the Premier League and I think he had to explain to his wife, but the easiest way to do was to say, oh, my manager's telling me that if I don't sign. So yeah, I'll take part of the blame for that.
A couple of other bits I want to talk about. Borough on the move, 3 consecutive wins. Neil Warnock was getting a little bit nibbled by some of the fans. All of a sudden, looks a very different picture. And 22-year-old Argentine Martin Pichero scored their second goal at the weekend. Looks a bit of a prospect. I don't know if you've seen much of him yet.
I have, and you're right. I mean, I love the exciting players, and he certainly looks that type. The other thing as well, to Neil in Middlesbrough, I mean, he's been absolutely hampered by injuries. So the fact that he's been able to rejig and put that team together and go and win games at tough places as well, and you say 3 in the bounce, and we mentioned earlier about how tight the league is. So those kind of runs in the Championship, I mean, they just elevate you right up the table. And so I think it's, as I said before, Middlesbrough, another one that will feel, if they've got the full squad available, they'll be up there challenging. I mean, listen, we love the Championship, Clem, as you know, and nothing changes every year. It's absolutely so exciting.
It certainly is. Relief for Birmingham, first win in 8. Troy Deeney on the score sheet for them as well, who, to say he's had a checkered start to his time at his beloved St Andrews, is an understatement. A couple of games when he didn't even get off the bench. That'll be a sense of relief all round, won't it?
It will, because actually last time we were on, Troy was on with you as well, and we were speaking about that, and I felt he's going to, as he will, I think he'll have a big, big impact, because not only what he brings, you know, on the field, but off the field as well. I mean, he's a proper leader, and I was delighted when I seen that, you know, back in amongst the goals, and, you know, I think that'll give him a big lift, that'll give them all a lift, because it was important to get that win, and hopefully they're up and running, because again, it's another big club in the Championship, and everybody craving the Premier League.
Yeah, and we should just mention Peterborough as well. A couple of consecutive wins for them that just give them confidence. Very leaky defence, particularly away from home, but managed to get a couple of wins in the bag.
Yeah, I actually, before I came out to India, I actually went to the Preston-Peterborough game that Preston had a so-called sticky start, as Preston normally do, but that was Preston's first win, and they merited it that day, but Peterborough still look dangerous, you know, going forward. Dembele's a wonderful player, and but you know, obviously Darren's teams, to be in fairness to them, they go home or away, they go to play, win games, and I really like that about Peterborough. They go all out, you know, to win their matches, and again, you know, they've managed to get a couple of decent results here, because success for them, if they stay in the Championship, I think that's an outstanding achievement for Peterborough and Darren. So you know, those results will help to achieve that.
Talking about outstanding game in the Championship this coming weekend is the early kickoff on Saturday. Fulham at home to West Brom into Sky Bet League One. And I wanted to praise Ryan Lowe and Plymouth Argyle, not just because they're 14 matches unbeaten, but also they have filed their accounts. They've filed them early. Despite COVID, they've declared a £375,000 profit. Great tribute to their supporters as well. 5,000 of them bought season tickets for last season despite not being able to go to the games. 97% did not request refunds the season before, when obviously the campaign was curtailed. They did get a grant of £1.2 million from the Premier League that kept them going, but also it shows their inherently decent business practices, because they were able to claim £2.5 million from business interruption insurance. Now, obviously, they have got a benefactor there in Simon Hallett. He put £3.5 million into the club in July of 2020, but he is pushing towards sustainability and pushing towards a well-run ship, and filing your accounts ahead of time and declaring a profit after a worldwide pandemic just goes to show the direction they're heading in off the field, does it not?
I think it's a brilliant story, both, as you've mentioned, on and off the field. I mean, Ryan's a terrific young manager. He's did well wherever he's been, and he's got Plymouth flying. But it helps because he has that backing of the owner, that security of knowing he's at a good club. And Plymouth, as you know, is a club with huge potential because of the catchment area. The only club in that area. I remember Plymouth competing against them when Paul Sturrock was the manager in the Championship. And that will be their aim again, to get back into the Championship and mix with some top teams. And they're certainly going the right way about it. And all credit to them. As you say, a great business plan off the park, and they're certainly showing what they can do on the park. So it's a really good, I think, a feel-good story just now, and everybody at Plymouth should be very pleased with how they're going. That being said, football changes quickly, so they must make sure they're focused, concentrated, and keep doing what they've been doing up to this point.
Should we pay further tribute to Ryan Lowe? Because sort of culturally, there's probably quite a big difference between managing in the north and managing in the severe south. He obviously got consecutive promotions with two different teams, Bury followed by Plymouth Argyle. He's probably managing family logistics there as well, which is, if he's got kids that are of a mid-school age, he might not necessarily have wanted to move everybody lock, stock, down. So he's spending maybe two-thirds of his week away from home, as you all want to do. That takes a bit of juggling, doesn't it, Owen? And it's a side of football that probably fans don't understand or get to see.
Yeah, I would suggest he's spending more than two-thirds, because obviously the job's 24/7. But equally, obviously, your families, you grow up in football, then you know what the sacrifices are as well, because ultimately, you know, you want to do well in football, but you want to do it well for your family as well. But yeah, he's did very well. You're right. You know, obviously, the Northwest, a huge catchment area, even in respect of looking at players who've been out at games. Obviously, Plymouth, not so much because of the geography of where it is. It's a huge, it's a bit of a challenge to get to most places. But what he does have, he has, as I say, that whole area to himself. So in many ways, an opportunity to build, you know, a very special club. So I think Ryan will have known you know, the pros and cons of taking the job before he did. But he certainly stepped in and he's done a fantastic job. And all credit to him. I've been very impressed by his work everywhere he's been.
Do you know what, Owen, when I look at League One as well, Plymouth, Wickham, Wigan, Sunderland, Rotherham, it is so, so tight up here. And Sunderland play Rotherham this weekend as well.
Yeah, listen, we spoke about the Championship earlier. League One's getting the same type of feel about it. You know, and there's going to be, I've got to say, there's going to be some other teams coming in to join the party. I mean, I think now Cookie's got Ipswich up and running. I fully expect them to move up. I think, you know, my local team, Accrington, and John's doing a great job again. And so it's such a competitive league. And, you know, there's going to be a few twists and turns, as there always is in the league. Obviously, with the change with... And you look at, you know, Johnny Jackson, who's been a terrific servant for the club and been a great assistant to the manager, been there. He goes to Sunderland, you know, and nobody expects, you know, Charlton to go there and win on Saturday, and they do. So, you know, I think when you get those three and four wins together, all of a sudden catapults you up the league. And League One's got that feel about it again, Clem. A bit like the Championship, it's going to be really tight.
Yeah. Do you know what? You mentioned Ipswich. I'm just looking at the fixtures over the space of the next few days. Ipswich, you've got Plymouth away and then Wickham away. So they've got the top two away. Plenty of chance to make up ground. One curious thing that caught my eye, I don't know whether you've heard anything on the grapevine or there's part of this story I haven't read. Bolton Wanderers captain Anthony Sarcevic has left to join Stockport County of the National League. And Tilly's departure had been involved in every game of Bolton Wanderers this season.
Yeah, no, I wasn't aware of that because looking at the team lines, I had noticed that obviously he'd played. So, well, the only
it's
person
weird, isn't it?
That
but,
is, yeah, well, know, it is. There's no doubt about it. I mean, having been, you know, never present, I could understand if somebody was maybe out of the team. But ultimately, you know, then I'm pretty sure the club will be able to answer that one for you, Clem.
Yeah, all right, thank you. Well, well-side-swerved young man. Into Sky Bet League 2, Forest Green Rovers still leading the way. Actually leading the way on and off the field because we've got COP 26 starting in Glasgow this coming weekend, Owen. Obviously, a lot of the nations coming together to discuss how we can improve sustainability and protect the environment going forward. Obviously, the EFL did announce a couple of weeks ago that they will work with consultancy firm Green Code, run by Forest Green Rovers owner Dale Vince, to try and guide clubs. Forest Green have been recognised by both the UN and FIFA for their environmentally friendly work. And the EFL chief executive, Trevor Burt, says he believes football will not be immune to the effects of climate crisis. Well, I think it's, you know, we've got different levels of awareness, certainly younger generations, Owen, became probably aware before our generation of just how serious this is. I don't think anybody's in any doubt now, and football's going to have its part to play to try and operate more effectively and protect the generations that come.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's that responsibility to Ferry Forest Green. I mean, they've led the way for many, many years now, and I think, you know, it's been outstanding. And they've been very vocal in terms of how they went about it, making the awareness. And I think that's the key, the awareness of it. So I think any bit that we can do, and certainly trying to set an example, because it's a very important, there's no doubt about when you look worldwide how important this is, and the awareness and making people, you know, that if we can do it, that we can all do a little bit better, then that will certainly help. But I think Forest Green deserve the plaudits they're getting because, they're making everybody aware of it.
Yeah, and I'm just looking, tucked in behind them in the table. I'm looking actually at the kind of experience there. Port Vale, Darrell Clark with all those promotions with Salisbury City and with Bristol Rovers tucked in second. Exeter, obviously Matt Taylor's had a couple of runs to the playoffs. Simon Weaver at Harrogate with the promotions that brought his club into the league. Dave Challen, a very experienced manager with Fylde, and obviously brought Hartlepool back into the league. Mickey Mellon back at Tranmere Rovers. You know, we're talking about competitiveness in the other couple of divisions, but you've got it with bells on in the third tier as well, Owen.
Absolutely. And I think the Swindon story is a great story as well.
Oh,
because
yeah,
obviously,
100%.
You know, Swindon at the start of the season were probably given everything went on, hoping, okay, let's just have that stability, let's stay in the league. But he signed some good players. I mean, they went to Forest Green the other week and won away from home, and they've picked up some big results, albeit, you know, a couple of ones that they probably expected to win that they haven't, but they're right there in the mix. And I think, you know, stories like that against Swindon Town, I remember playing against them actually in the semi-final of the Coca-Cola, the League Cup, when I was at Bolton Wanderers. and they'd been in the Premier League, they were down the Championship at this point. So there's no doubt, again, the potential to build something at Swindon. And I like the way the new owners, the managers come in, there's a freshness about them. And the manager himself, you know, he had got a bloodied nose, as we say in football, you know, at Bristol Rovers, but he's bounced back, he's putting something in place. And I just think that's a brilliant story. And good luck to them. I hope he goes on to do really, really well.
Yeah, that'd be the late 1800s, was it, when you were playing that? Just to say, because obviously there'll be a lot of younger listeners listening to this thinking, oh, I'll have to look that up in the record books. But if they do, they'll have to thumb through lots of sheets of paper to go that far back, mate.
93-94 season, Clem. 93-94.
Okay, fine. Which unbelievably is a very, very, very long time ago. Listen, couple of other things I want to mention. I want to mention James Robey getting the Newport County job. Come from being first team coach at Cardiff, so well grounded under Neil Warnock, Neil Harris, Mick McCarthy. You don't survive those changes of regime without being very decent. But they're following a template of Mike Flynn. He's a Newport lad. He's actually a cousin of Tony Pulis by marriage. I'm not sure who's marriage to who, but they've gone a very similar template to under Mike Flynn.
Yeah, I think they've looked, and they've certainly, you know, young Robey, they know he's got quality. He's got obviously terrific ideas in the game. He's worked with a lot of good people, but now he's the opportunity to be his own man, and, you know, and a chance to get his own ideas across, how he wants to play and what he wants to do. And I think that's a very good appointment. I think Newport's a good club. I think they're well balanced. I don't think they'd really do things in terms of a knee-jerk reaction. I think this has been thought well through, and I've got no doubts that they're going to do very well. A good club, and obviously had tremendous days in the past, as you know, and they'll want back up through the leagues, and they have the potential to do that.
Yeah, and finally, I just wanted to get word for Neil Cox at Scunthorpe United, because they picked up their second win in 24 league matches. Maybe a symptom of the times that their owner there was a little more cautious in terms of pressing the button, but the sense of relief that he must have felt on Saturday when they got that win, having been, you know, so suppressed for so long, Owen.
Yeah, I know. And, I think when you look at the bottom end of the league, because obviously that's the bit that nobody wants to be, because, you know, you look, it's when you do lose your place in the league and in the National League, it's an unforgiving division to try and get back out of, as we've seen. You look at how many, you know, former league clubs are now in the National League, the Wrexhams and such forth, trying to get out of it. And you look at the bottom, you mentioned Scunthorpe, but obviously like Mansfield and Oldham and, you know, some terrific clubs down there, you know, fighting away. So, I mean, that's going to be a real, real bad. I think Carlisle are down towards the bottom end as well, which is surprising. So there's going to be some big clubs in that division fighting, you know, at the wrong end of the table, and they'll all be hoping to move up quickly. And that win for Scunthorpe, it may just be the catalyst. It gives a little bit of confidence, a little boost, and you can get those run of games again to get up and running.
Lovely to see you. Hope you're having a great time out there. Thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure as always. I love with you too. It's different class.
That is it for this episode. A big thank you to Owen Coyle and to Scott Parker. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button, and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com, podcast@efl.com. I'm Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.